Speaking on this program is Curtis Cates.
Job, stand up on your own hind legs. Gird up your loins like a man. Because I'm going to ask you some questions. And you are a human being. And you're able to think. And you're able to contemplate. And so I am going to challenge you by asking you some questions. All right? Now, what kind of questions? Now, God doesn't belittle Job. God doesn't take advantage of Job. Job thought that he would take advantage of him. He didn't take advantage of Job. He didn't ridicule Job. He did not call upon Job to repent of some grievous sin which brought this suffering upon him, because there was no such grievous sin. But he wanted to draw Job out of himself and let Job see the bigger picture and to see God is the God of the universe. He's not just the God of Job. And there are other people and there are animals. And there's the universe that God takes care of. You see, Job was thinking only about himself, and God tries to draw him out of that and get him to see the bigger picture. And so he asks him some questions when Job is girded up his loins now like a man. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth, Job? Like a builder, you know, laying the foundation. Who laid the cornerstone of the earth? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God, the angels shouted for joy. Well, Job wasn't back there. Or who shut up the sea with doors when it broke forth as if it had been issued out of the womb? Here are the oceans bound by the shores, like we saw the other day. When I made clouds the garment thereof, and thick darkness a swaddling band for it. Here it is spoken of in its, when God first created it, like a baby. A human baby that has that swaddling band around it. And I marked it out for my bound and set bars and doors and said to the waves, come so far, but don't come any further. Here shall thy proud waves be stayed. The dry land and the waters and the boundaries of the seas. And then he says, hast thou commanded the morning since the days began? Do you tell, which way is the east? Do you tell the sun when to come up in the morning in the east? Do you say, all right, I want in the morning now, I want you to come up at 6:25 in the morning. Job didn't do that, right? Now, notice verse 16. Many of these are pre-scientific statements. You have to realize that. Man did not know these things. He could not come with these things when this book was written. It was written by inspiration. Notice, hast thou entered into the springs of the sea? Did you know the earth, the sea had springs? You do, because they've discovered them. But they had not discovered them until a few years ago, that under the oceans are springs. But Job says it. Hast thou walked in the recesses of the deep? And so forth. Hast thou comprehended the earth in its breadth? I know that the earth is 8,000 miles across, 25,000 miles around. But did Job know that? Declare as thou knowest. Or where is the light, way to the dwelling of light? Did you know, and you and I do, that light travels in waves? But Job didn't know that. As for darkness, where is the place thereof? The rotation of the earth. The rotation of the earth. Here is the sun. The earth is rotating. Day and night is moving, as it were, across the earth because of the rotation of the earth. Did Job know that the earth was rotating? Pre-scientific statement. Notice verse 22. Hast thou entered into the treasure of the snow? Do you know where the snow and the hail originate? Treasuries. The snow is a great blessing to the farmers. And then notice verse 24. By what way is the light parted? You can send white light through a prism, and you receive on the other side the spectrum, like the rainbow. You know, that is received when the light goes into these millions and billions of droplets, you know. And the reflection and refraction causes the rainbow. See? Job, do you know how the light is parted? Who has cleft channel for the water flood? And so forth. Or a way for the lightning of the thunder. Alright? To cause it to rain on a land where no man is, in the wilderness. Why does it rain there? Because I made it to rain there. Why does it rain there? Because I have plants and animals over there. Do you understand the rain cycle, Job? Do you understand the evaporation? Do you understand the evaporation from the oceans and other places? And then the coalescing, the condensing and the coalescing of the moisture in the atmosphere, and then it falling in the form of rain, and then it going down by the rivers back to the oceans and so forth, and making this cycle. Job, do you know that? Do you know about it? Hath the rain a father? Who hath begotten the drops of the dew? And so forth. All of this has to do with amazing scientific facts. Meteorology and the Coriolis effect, the rotation of the earth, and how the winds move across the earth to keep the earth cool and not stagnant and so forth. And then he says, "Canst thou bind the cluster of the Pleiades or loose the bands of Orion?" And then he said, "Can you do a rain dance and cry out to the clouds and say, I want you to come over here and I want you to rain, you drop down rain on these crops over here. Can you do that, Job?" Verse 34, that the abundance of the waters may cover thee. Canst thou send forth the lightning and say, I want you now, lightning, I want you to hit right over there. And then he deals with the animal kingdom, and he talks about the various animals, like the goats, chapter 39, or the wild ass. You know, man had trouble binding the wild ass. What gave the ass that kind of wildness? God said, I did that. I did that. All right? And the wild ox, get him to go out there and plant your crops for you. And get your crops in when they mature. Man couldn't do that and bind the wild ox like that because God made him wild. The wings of the ostrich. The ostrich is an amazing bird. It can run many miles an hour. Alright? A horse and rider can try to outrun an ostrich, and they can't begin to think about commencing to keep up with the ostrich. And you know, that ostrich is pretty dumb, because she will go into a place, a path, and she will lay her eggs right in the middle of that path. She's not worried about what may come by and step on those eggs and kill those chicks, whatever. Now, God said, Job, why is the ostrich that dumb? That's because I wanted her like that. Notice verse 17. Because God hath deprived her of wisdom. But when a horse and rider tries to outrun her, brother, there's no way she scorneth the horse and the rider. And then the courage of the horse. Who gave that horse that courage? I did. I gave it. Courage. You get a man of armor on that horse, he's going to fight another person out there on his horse, and that horse says, "Aha, let me out in the battle." And here's the man that has the mail on him, the armor, and the horse has the armor, but here's the man with the spear, and he takes off out there. That horse is not afraid. Who gave that horse that courage? I did, Jim. I gave it to him. But you know, evidently, Job, you think that you can run the universe better than I can. And you think that I haven't done just exactly like you think things ought to be done. And so I'll tell you what. I'll just make you king of the universe for a day. Did y'all ever see Queen for a Day? Way back there. Queen for a Day? Jack Bailey? He'd have some of these contestants, these ladies, you know, that had had a difficult time and so forth, and each one would tell what she's been through, and then the audience would vote, and you'd have that applause meter, you know, to see who was going to be queen for a day. Here's God, and said He says to Job, chapter 40, Job, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to make you king for a day. But I'll tell you what you're going to have to be able to do if you're king for a day. You're going to have to reward and give exactly what the righteous deserve, and you're going to have to give to the wicked what they deserve. And you're going to have an arm, a muscle, that's as big as mine. Okay? You're going to have a big muscle. Sometime when I was a child, sometimes the boys would say, "Let me see your muscle. Let me feel your muscle." Well, I never had much muscle. But anyway, be that as it may, God says, "Do you have an arm like I have, Joe?" Well, I'm going to test you a little bit. But what I want you to do is, I want you to go out here and conquer Behemoth. Verse 15 of chapter 40. And then He says, I want you to conquer Leviathan. I wish we had time to talk about that. But these were huge animals, probably dinosaurs, in my way of thinking. And Behemoth might have been Leviathan might have been a fire-breathing dragon. You know, you see that in Beowulf and other places, fire-breathing dragons, way back yonder. Well, where did the idea come from? I want you to notice here, his strong scales are his pride, verse 15 of chapter 41. They are joined one to another. They stick together so that they cannot be sundered. Go out there and drag that thing out of the water and bring him up here, Joe. His sneezings flash forth light, and his eyes are as the eyelids of the morning, bright, shining. Out of his mouth go burning torches, and sparks of fire leap forth. Out of his nostrils a smoke goeth as of a boiling pot and burning rushes. His breath, his nephesh, kindleth coals, sets coals on fire. And a flame goeth from his mouth. Go out there and drag him out of the water. And you show that you can control these animals. Chapter 42. Then answered Jehovah, Job answered Jehovah and said, you see, earlier when God was talking to him, he hadn't been too impressed with the way that God was asking those questions. But then he's challenged in an additional way, and he answered Jehovah and said, I know that thou canst do all things. Thou art God. No purpose of thine can be restrained. 42:2. Who is this that hideth counsel by without knowledge? Chapter 38:1. I'm the one. I didn't know. I don't know what thou knowest. I spoke too rashly. I had questions about thee that I knew nothing about. Therefore I uttered that which I understood not, things too full of wonder for me, which I knew not. Hear, I beseech thee, and I will speak. I had heard of thee by the hearing of the ear. Here's a fella, you know, he's on the job. The foreman says, I'd like for you to go down and do such and such. And he says, well, you know, I'll think about that. If I get around to it, if I get a little time, well, I'll do that. And the foreman says, why, I'd be fine. And just why are you doing that? Just stop by the pay window and pick up your final check on the way. Well, he hadn't heard it just exactly like that. And so he says, I better get on it. And so Job says, I had heard of thee. I had heard about thee, God. But now mine eye seeth thee. I see things in a more full way than I've ever seen them before about thee. Therefore, wherefore, I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. And so here is Job humbling himself before God. He did not commit the grievous sin to bring all this upon him. But he did speak rashly. So he repented of that. But then God turned to Eliphaz and he said, you and your friends have not spoken to me about me righteous things as Job had. And so you get animals. And you go to Job. And you get Job to offer those sacrifices for you so that you can be forgiven. And they did according as Jehovah commanded. Job offered the sacrifices on their behalf. And God accepted. Now what if Job had said, I'm not going to offer sacrifices for you. Why, you rascals. You did all that to me. You falsely accused me. No, sir. I'm not going to offer sacrifices for you. You know, those who are forgiven have to be forgiving, right? Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Job willingly offered sacrifices for his friends. And they were forgiven because Job was a prefigure of Christ, the ultimate, the Messiah, who would offer sacrifices for all of us, sacrifice of himself so that all of us could be saved. And the Bible says, and Jehovah turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. See, Job had to have the right attitude. He had to be merciful. God turned the captivity. Jehovah gave Job twice as much as he had before. Twice as many sheep, twice as many oxen, twice as many. And by the way, he gave him twice as many children. Brother Cates, now wait a minute. Didn't he give him 10 more? That's right. How many did he give him earlier? 10. Didn't he double his sheep? 7,000? 14,000? Yes. But you see, children aren't sheep. Those who were killed in the house that fell on them in the storm were with God, paradise. When Job was given 10 more children, how many does that make? 20, doesn't it? 10 already with God? 10 more? That's 20. What if he had doubled his children? That would have meant that is 10 children who were killed were no different from the animals. They just went back to the dust. But my friends, the 10 that were killed went to God, and then he had 10 more, that's 20. And then his friends came, and his brothers and his sisters. Who? What about Job's wife? It's my opinion that she fed him the whole time. And she was still living. I think the necessary implication is that she repented and she was the mother of these children. But anyway, his brothers and sisters and all they had been his acquaintance did eat bread, came and did eat bread in his house. They bemoaned him and comforted him concerning all the evil that Jehovah had brought upon him, that is, permitted to happen. Every man also brought a piece of money and every one a ring of gold. So Jehovah blessed the latter end of Job more than his beginning, and he had 14,000 sheep and so forth. He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. And you see the names of the children, that is, the daughters. And they inherited with the brothers. That didn't happen in the Mosaic age, Numbers 27. In all the land were no women found as fair as the daughters of Job, and their father gave them inheritance among their brethren. And after this, Job lived another 140 years and saw his sons and his sons' sons, even 4 generations. So Job died being old and full of debts. How could Job face the future? Throughout the whole book, he never learned why he had suffered. Now, I think God revealed it to him later when he wrote the book. I think he's the writer. But it's interesting that throughout the events of the book, Job never saw Satan's role in the struggle. And God wouldn't talk to him for a long time. Now, how in the world can Job face the future, having been destroyed like that? Having, he thought, been abandoned by God like that? And now, how does he face the future? You have a friend, and that friend is a bosom friend. Closest friend you've ever had. and you spend time every day with each other, you talk to one another, and so forth. And then all of a sudden, your friend disappears like that. Gone. Didn't leave you a message, didn't leave you a note, doesn't call you, doesn't leave a message of any kind, and is gone for 6 months. And you wonder, what did I do? What happened? What happened to the relationship between us? But after 6 months, your friend comes back and says, "Oh, I have so missed you. I love you more than I've ever loved anybody. You're so special to me. It is so good to be back. I was called away. I couldn't talk with you. I didn't have that opportunity. But here I am back, and you're just as dear to me and even more so than you have ever been." You don't have to know all the details. Did Job have to know all the details? No. It was very much enough that God was still his friend and that they were talking. He didn't have to know why he had suffered, but he knew God knew. And he knew that God was with him and that God would continue to bless him. And that's the way, my friends, that Job could face the future. I don't know why certain things have happened to me. You don't know why certain things have happened to you. But you know God. And if we do what's right, the Lord will never abandon us. And He will not forsake us. He is our true, genuine